One night of his life, Don Juan slept alone. Returning to Seville in the spring, he was held up, some hours' ride from the city, by the floods of the Guadalquivir, a river as dirty as an old lion after the rains. And he was obliged to stay at the country estate of the Quintero family. The doorway, the walls, the windows of the house were hung with the black and violet draperies of mourning when he arrived there. Quintero's wife was dead. She had been dead a year. Young Quintero took him in and even smiled to see Don Juan spattered and drooping in the rain like a sodden cockerel. There was malice in his smile. Quintero was mad with loneliness and grief. The man who had possessed and discarded all women was received by a man demented because he had lost only one. "My house is yours," said Quintero, speaking the formula. There was bewilderment in his eyes. Those who grieve do not find the world and its people either real or believable. Irony inflects the voices of mourners. And there was malice, too, in Quintero's further greetings. He could receive Don Juan now without that fear, that terror which he brought to the husbands of Seville. It was perfect, Quintero thought, that for once in his life Don Juan should have arrived at an empty house. There was not even, as Don Juan quickly found out, a maid, for Quintero was served only by a manservant, being unable any longer to bear the sight of women. This servant dried the guests' clothes, and in an hour or two brought in a bad dinner, food which stamped up and down in the stomach, like people waiting for a coach in the cold. Quintero was torturing his body as well as his mind, and as the familiar pains arrived, they agonized him and set him off about his wife. Grief had also made Quintero an actor. His eyes had the hollow, taper-haunted dusk of the theatre as he spoke of the beautiful girl. He dwelt upon their courtship, on details of her beauty and temperament, and how he had rushed her from the church to the marriage bed, like a man racing a tray of diamonds through the streets into the safety of a bank vault. The presence of Don Juan turned every man into an artist when he was telling his own love story. One had to tantalize and surpass the great seducer. And Quintero, rolling it all off in the grand manner, couldn't resist telling that his bride had died on her marriage night. "Man!" cried Don Juan. He started straight off on stories of his own. But Quintero hardly listened. He had returned to the state of exhaustion and emptiness, which is natural to grief. As Don Juan talked, the madman followed his own thoughts like an actor preparing and mumbling his next entrance. And the thought he had had when Don Juan first appeared at the door returned to him. A man must be a monster to make a man feel triumphant that his own wife was dead. Half listening and indigestion aiding, Quintero felt within himself the total hatred of all the husbands of Seville for this diabolical man. And as Quintero brooded upon this, it occurred to him that it was probably not chance that he had a vengeance in his power. The decision was made. The wine being finished, Quintero called for his manservant and gave orders to change Don Juan's room. "For," said Quintero dryly, "His Excellency's visit is an honor, and I cannot allow one who has slept in the most delicately scented rooms in Spain to pass the night in a chamber which stinks to heaven of goat." "The closed room?" said the manservant, astonished that the room which still held the great dynastic marriage bed, and which had not been used more than half a dozen times by his master since the lady's death, was to be given to a stranger. Yet to this room Quintero led his guest, and there parted from him with eyes so sparkling with ill intention that Don Juan, who was sensitive to this kind of point, understood perfectly that the cat was being let into the cage only because the bird had long ago flown out. The humiliation was unpleasant, Don Juan saw the night stretching before him like a desert. What a bed to lie in. So wide, so unutterably vacant, so malignantly inopportune. He took off his clothes, snuffed the lamp wick. He lay down, knowing that on either side of him lay wastes of sheet, drafty and uninhabited, except by bugs. A desert. To move an arm 1 inch to the side, to push out a leg, however cautiously, was to enter desolation. For miles and miles the foot might probe, the fingers or the knee explore a friendless Antarctica. Yet to lie rigid and still was to have a foretaste of the grave. And here, too, he was frustrated, for though the wine kept him yawning, that awful food romped in his stomach, jolting him back from the edge of sleep the moment he got there. There is an art in sleeping alone in a double bed, but this art was unknown to Don Juan. The difficulty is easily solved. If one cannot sleep on one side of the bed, one moves over and tries the other. 2 hours or more must have passed before this occurred to him. Sullen-headed, he advanced into the desert, and the night air lying chill between the sheets flapped and made him shiver. He stretched out his arm and crawled towards the opposite pillow. The coldness, the more than virgin frigidity of linen. He put down his head, and drawing up his knees, he shivered. Soon, he supposed, he would be warm again. But in the meantime, ice could not have been colder. It was unbelievable. Ice was the word for that pillow and those sheets. Ice. Was he ill? Had the rain chilled him that his teeth must chatter like this and his legs tremble? Far from getting warmer, he found the cold growing. Now it was on his forehead and his cheeks, like the arms of ice on his body, like the legs of ice upon his legs. Suddenly, in superstition, he got up on his hands and stared down at the pillow in the darkness, threw back the bedclothes and looked down upon the sheet. His breath was hot, yet blowing against his cheeks was a breath colder than the grave. His shoulders and body were hot, yet limbs of snow were drawing him down. And just as he would have shouted his appalled suspicion, lips like wet ice unfolded upon his own, and he sank down to a kiss, unmistakably a kiss, which froze him like a winter. In his own room, Quintero lay listening. His mad eyes were exalted, and his ears were waiting. He was waiting for the scream of horror. He knew the apparition. There would be a scream, a tumble, hands fighting for the light, fists knocking at the door, and Quintero had locked the door. But when no scream came, Quintero lay talking to himself, remembering the night the apparition had first come to him and had made him speechless and left him choked and stiff. It would be even better if there were no scream. Quintero lay awake through the night, building castle after castle of triumphant revenge, and receiving, as he did so, the ovations of the husbands of Seville. The stallion is gelded! At an early hour, Quintero unlocked the door and waited downstairs impatiently. He was a wreck after a night like that. Don Juan came down at last. He was, Quintero observed, pale. Or was he pale? Did you sleep well? Quintero asked furtively. Very well, Don Juan replied. I do not sleep well in strange beds myself, Quintero insinuated. Don Juan smiled and replied that he was more used to strange beds than his own. Quintero scowled. I reproach myself. The bed was large, he said. But the large, Don Juan said, were necessarily as familiar to him as the strange. Quintero bit his nails. Some noise had been heard in the night, something like a scream, a disturbance. The manservant had noticed it also. Don Juan answered him that disturbances in the night had indeed bothered him at the beginning of his career, but now he took them in his stride. Quintero dug his nails into the palms of his hands. He brought out the trump. "I am afraid," Quintero said, "it was a cold bed. You must have frozen." "I am never cold for long," Don Juan said, and unconsciously anticipating the manner of a poem that was to be written in his memory 2 centuries later, declaimed, "The blood of Don Juan is hot, for the sun is the blood of Don Juan." Quintero watched. His eyes jumped like flies to every movement of his guest. He watched him drink his coffee. He watched him tighten the stirrups of his horse. He watched Don Juan bolt into the saddle. Don Juan was humming, and when he went off was singing in that intolerable tenor of his, which was like a cock crow in the olive groves. Quintero went into the house and rubbed his unshaven chin. Then he went out again to the road, where the figure of Don Juan was now only a small smoke of dust between the eucalyptus trees. Quintero went up to the room where Don Juan had slept and stared at it with accusations and suspicions. He called the manservant. "I shall sleep here tonight," Quintero said. The manservant answered carefully. Quintero was mad again, and the moon was still only in its first quarter. The man watched his master during the day, looking towards Seville. It was too warm after the rains. The country steamed like a laundry. And then, when the night came, Quintero laughed at his doubts. He went up to the room, and as he undressed, he thought of the assurance of those ice-cold lips, the icicle fingers, and those icy arms. She had not come last night. Oh, what fidelity! "To think," he would say in his remorse to the ghost, "that malice had so disordered him that he had been base and credulous enough to use the dead for a trick." Tears were in his eyes as he lay down, and for some time he dared not turn on his side and stretch out his hand to touch what, in his disorder, he had been willing to betray. He loathed his heart. He craved, yet how could he hope for it now, that miracle of recognition and forgiveness? It was this craving which moved him at last. His hands went out, and they were met. The hands, the arms, the lips moved out of their invisibility and soundlessness towards him. They touched him. They clasped him. They drew him down. But what was this? He gave a shout. He fought to get away, kicked out and swore. And so the manservant found him wrestling with the sheets, striking out with fists and knees, roaring that he was in hell. "Those hands, those lips, those limbs," he screamed, "were burning him." They were of ice, no more. They were of fire.